Hello, beautiful friends. I am Laurel Bleeden Maffei with Illuminating Souls, welcoming you to this episode of Sleepy Bedtime Blessings, a podcast designed to help you rest, relax, and fall asleep, all while deepening in your connection with your angels and the wellspring of divine love that is here for you. If we're meeting for the first time, I am an angelic practitioner, a spiritual teacher, and an encourager of souls. And I do this through one-on-one angel sessions. And if you've never had an angel session with me before, I'm happy to share with you a little bit about what it's like. It's an hour-long session that is typically done over the phone. If you live outside of the U.S., we can also do it on Zoom. And I call in the angels, and it's really designed to be a conversation in consciousness that will help you deepen in your connection with the magic in your soul and your divine guidance. And there's deep healing that can also come from these sessions. And I love getting to do angel sessions for you. So if you're ever guided to schedule one, just reach out to me at laurel@illuminatingsouls.com or visit my website, illuminatingsouls.com. I also offer soul mentoring, which provides for consistent support as you navigate a time of transition in life. And I also offer a variety of classes. Right now I'm facilitating two beautiful classes. One is called The Power of Your Voice, where the participants are opening to their own unique, authentic voice and message. And I'm also facilitating another class for soul-inspired entrepreneurs. So there's always something interesting coming out in terms of classes and offerings. And you can sign up for my mailing list so you will be the first to hear at illuminatingsouls.com. But for now, the angels and I are here to help you come into an expanse of rest. So I invite you to take a nice deep breath in and allow the love of your angels to flow to you now. So I created this as a sleep podcast because I have been using sleep podcasts for years. They help me to shift from my waking consciousness to that beautiful, mysterious place where somehow we drift off and go to sleep. And for me, sleep podcasts have helped build that bridge. And I also want to acknowledge I've heard from many of you who are using this podcast during the daytime. For some of you, it helps you rest. Others, you use this to just help bring in the higher frequencies. And so this podcast is for all of you, however you're guided to use it. I really invite you to attune to what best serves you. There's no wrong way to use it. This is created with love from my heart to yours as a way to support you as you navigate your path, My journey in business and in life, but especially with Illuminating Souls, is deeply intuitive. That's why it's not unusual for me not to know what I will be offering or doing months from now. As I record this, it's April of 22, and I cannot tell you what I will be teaching in June. So I do things very intuitively, and I trust the breadcrumbs that the angels and God leave for me. And this podcast is one of them. When I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do next, I drop into my heart and I ask this very simple question. I ask, how can I love my people right now? And by my people, I mean you, my audience, my Illuminating Souls family. How can I support you right now? How can I love you right now? And so this podcast was born because it just allows me and the angels to show up and love you right now, across time and space. Whether you're listening to this episode on the day it drops, or you're listening to it a year later, or maybe even 10 years later, who knows? I get to love you now. It's a miracle. I was thinking this morning that one of the very sweet byproducts of this podcast is that these episodes, I picked a podcast host. For those of you who are unfamiliar with how podcasting works, you sign up with a platform that will host the podcast episodes so that all the different podcast apps can access the recordings. So I host my podcast with a company called Buzzsprout. There are a lot of different companies out there. They're very good companies. And one of the reasons I chose Buzzsprout is once I have uploaded an episode that's part of my paid hosting, whether I continue to pay for hosting, those episodes will always remain on their server, always sort of being relative. And I love this idea that these episodes will exist. I don't know for how long, but they may be out there for a long, long time. I'm someone who loves genealogy, and when I find something that reflects a distant cousin or a great-great aunt or uncle, I feel like I struck gold. I get so excited. And so I think sometimes I don't know who's going to listen to this beyond, you know, those of us who are here in the early days of the podcast. And if you are, I'm so deeply grateful for you. I think we have about 40 to 60 regular listeners right now, and I am grateful for each one of you. And I also think it's super cool that years from now, maybe someone will stumble upon this. And I love the ability to expand time and space. Like, our lives leave ripples in this world. And we don't always know what those ripples are, but I know if you're listening that you are one who values the ripples of love that you seed and others seed and perhaps the ripples of love that came before you. Truly, it is a blessing that our lives are magnifiers for love in this world. When we set our intention that we don't have to become super famous, we don't have to become an influencer with tens of thousands of followers, we don't have to write best-selling books. We never know when a seed of love planted will blossom. I have found seeds of love all across my timeline. I have found newspaper articles about relatives who passed away almost 100 years ago, yet still their life has deep meaning to me. Or authors who wrote their books that I share with you now. And that their legacy still has meaning. So right here and right now, we are collaborating, we are co-creating with the universe as we do every day of our lives to ripple this love not only into this moment, but into the moments to come. And we also send love into the past with our gratitude for those who have come here before us. And in this way, we participate in the ripple of love. If you'll think of the ripple not so much as a one-directional wave, but more, if you've ever dropped a stone or a pebble into a lake or a body of water, and there are concentric circles, ripples that just move in every direction. I believe that is how love flows. This love flows to the present moment, right here and now. This love also flows to the past and to the future. And the truth is, we don't have to know about any of that. We are not responsible for anything except for breathing in this moment. So I invite you to take a breath in and feel this ripple of love. That every moment that came before this one made space for this breath. Yes, to whoever invented the technology that allows me to plug my microphone into my laptop. However many thousands or millions of lives contributed to that technology. To whoever figured out about podcasting, right? So many beautiful, profound moments happened to make this one possible. And I don't know about you, but whenever I contemplate life in this way, I'm aware of the profound foundational matrix of light that is here supporting each one of us. So I invite you to take a deep breath in and feel the love. The infinite number of moments that came before this one that are making this moment possible for you. And feel the love coming across time and space. You are you. You are a blessing in this world. You hold love in your heart, and you pray for brighter tomorrows. You care deeply for the well-being of others. And I know all of this has the potential to sound trite or like a Hallmark card. But look around the world, there are many for whom these core values are not as essential. So you truly are a blessing in this world. And I'm going to call in the angels who are already here. I have felt them since before I started speaking. There is such love and compassion flowing in for you. Receive it. Allow it to sustain you. You need not do the heavy lifting on your own. Your team of angels, they are here. They are here to support and love you. So you cozy on in and snuggle on up. And I will call in the angels. So beautiful angels on high, we know you are already here. And we thank you for the invitation to gather in this moment, to celebrate and acknowledge each of the beloveds hearing this message, whether they are listening within a few days of this broadcast or weeks or months or years later, that the continuum of love that we are accessing is not bound by time nor space. Angels, I ask that you bring these waves of love forward in a way that will be meaningful to each of the beloveds listening. Angels, I know you hear each of their prayers, and you know the beauty of their spirits. We ask that you clear any imbalance, any negativity, any doubt or worry that we do not need to carry, that these be lifted, that what might feel heavy or burdensome to us is lighter than a feather to you. So if you will help to carry that which feels heavy, so that we can feel a true lightness of spirit, so that we can dance with God in our hearts and feel the beauty of this earth and of our lives. And as I feel the angels coming in, I am reminded of an Osho Zen tarot card that has been deeply meaningful for me. So the Osho Zen tarot deck is a beautiful deck that I started using before I got into the angel cards. And one day, this would have been in 2000, which you will hear me talk about as the year of my awakening, because many, many things happened that year that propelled me forward on this path. And one day, it probably would have been April, so maybe around this time of year, I was shuffling my deck of cards and I pulled a random card. And the card that I pulled was the celebration card. And the artwork on the card is this image of three women. It's an artist's rendering, three women. They have their hands thrown up in the air. They're dancing. They're wearing long dresses. And it's raining, and they're in a forest. And the message of the card says that every day is worthy of celebration, that we don't have to wait for a birthday or a promotion or a reason to celebrate, that we can drop into this joy every single day. And as I looked at this card, the image on it, I started to cry because I had forgotten how to live from that place. And in that moment, I prayed to God, God, help me remember. Help me learn how to live from this place. And it was so meaningful to me that I went to my local Kinko's back then. Back then we had to go to Kinko's for copies. And I made an enlargement of the card, as big as I could make it. And I was going to put it up on my bedroom wall as a reminder of what I was moving towards. And I remember as I was exiting the Kinko's, walking back to my car, I found a wish penny. And it felt so sacred to me. It felt like a sign. So I took the wish penny, and when I got home, I took a piece of scotch tape and taped it to the photo of the card I had just made, or the reproduction of the card I had just made. And for over a year, that stayed on my bedroom wall. The enlargement of the celebration card with the three women and the wish penny. And what was so interesting, I shared in another episode how my friends Luce and Judy came back to find me that year. That card would come to symbolize the three of us. And we would go to the beach and we would dance together. And it was such a remarkable way that God and the angels helped me manifest my experience of joy. Oh, just take a deep breath in with me. I have no idea how I got to this story from where we were, but I trust that there's a reason. So here's to the ripple of love, my friends. Here is to every day being worthy of celebration. Here's to finding our people that we can dance in the rain with and celebrate just because it's an ordinary afternoon. Here's to finding our people who know us and really get us and can hold a bright, beautiful space for all that you are. In this moment, I send this wish on your behalf out into a universe that loves you. And who knows, maybe there's a future gathering. And we'll all get to gather together and dance around the fire or in the rain or in a forest or on a beach. Our hearts know how to be in the loving together. We know how to be in celebration together. And in this moment, I have such gratitude for you and for the miracle of our togetherness in this moment. That you matter, your life matters, and you certainly matter to me. Otherwise, I just would be talking into nothingness. But I'm not. I get to broadcast this message, and in this moment, you are receiving it. Isn't that amazing? We are so blessed. Feel the blessings of this moment and know that you are loved. And my beautiful ones, while you rest, I'm going to tell you a story. And I hope you'll indulge me, because I'm going to make this about Passover, the second night. So part two. Or if you're Jewish, think of this as the second night of Passover. And I appreciate you indulging me. As I record this, it is Saturday, and last night was the first night of Passover, and tonight will be the second night of Passover. And when you hear this episode, I don't know what date it will be, but this episode will be published on Sunday, which is going to be Easter Sunday. So if you think about the matrix of love that goes across all of our lives, if you have any loving last memories of this transit from your lifetime, it just feels like we're entering into a sacred portal filled with a lot of love. Regardless if these holidays are important to you, there is a magnitude of love that is building up right now that we are accessing in this episode. So in episode 41, I shared with you some of my Passover memories. I was raised Jewish, and I loved the holiday of Passover growing up, because we would get together with our family two nights in a row, and I loved my family, and build memories, and go through the service, which is what the Seder is known as. And when I finished the episode, I realized I left out a lot, which is okay. Listen, I can't share a lifetime of memories in half an hour, but there were more memories that were showing up that I thought I would love to share. They bring a lot of warmth to my heart. And so here we go. Consider this our second night of Passover, if you will. So these days, our family is dispersed. And this happens. I don't know what has happened in your life, but in our life, as we've all grown up and our parents have passed on, we've dispersed. You know, we've moved into different parts of the country and life happens. And so it's not as easy for us to gather together for the holidays, which is okay. This happens in life. And I have a beautiful life now. And this isn't profoundly sad for me. It's just more the observation that life has changed. And this probably is why it brings me so much joy to bathe in the memories. I texted some of my family yesterday when it was going to be the first Seder, and I just was thinking back to all the Seders we'd had together and how the memory of those keep me warm now, so that even though we're not together now in person, they are always a part of my heart on this holiday. So here were some of the things I was thinking about. The house we grew up in was a good-sized house, but it also was small. The rooms were kind of small. I live in a 1938 house now, and the rooms here are small as well. There was no such thing as an open kitchen floor plan, right? The open great room that came about in the last 2 decades did not exist then. And our dining room, we had a formal dining room, but it was really small. So it had walls on all four sides. It was rectangular shaped. And there was a doorway on one side that led into the kitchen, which was a fairly small, modest kitchen. And another doorway that was right near it that ultimately led into the living room. So our dining room would house a buffet and our dining room table and chairs. And then there were two built-ins where my mom stored her china and her serving dishes. It was one of those dining room tables that could be expanded, and you would put the leaves in when you were going to have company. So that was always the first sign that a holiday was about to begin. My mom would have one of us help her extend the table. And I don't know how we all fit in the dining room. I don't know, did any of you grow up with a small dining room? It somehow managed to accommodate us. I don't know how this was possible. In the early years of our childhood, there would have been 5 of us in our family, 4 in my aunt's family, so that's 9, and my aunt and uncle, my aunt who was my father's sister. So that would be 11 of us. Now, 3 of us were small kids at that time, so we didn't take up as much space. But it wouldn't be long before my cousins would get married, so their wives would get added in. So now we were at 13 in our tiny dining room. And it was small. And the thing was, is that if you were sitting at one end of the dining room where you were boxed in, there was no getting up to go to the bathroom in the middle of a dinner. Because everybody would have to stand up and exit the dining room for someone at the far end of the dining room to be able to get out and go to the bathroom. And so my father would sit at the far end of the head of the table where he would not be able to get out. My father was a very kind and patient man, and so he would just sit sort of boxed in there for the whole meal until everybody finally would get up and leave. And my aunt and uncle would sit down at that end of the table with him. And I seem to recall that us kids would sit closer to the other end of the table, which is where you had more of an ability to get out if you needed to. Because remember, it's Passover, and at some point the kids are going to look for the Afikoman, so we had to be mobile. And so whenever I think of the Seder or any holiday at our house, it's my father at the end of the dining room table where he would just sit until whatever the meal was over. And my mom would be at the other end, which was closest to the kitchen, because she was forever getting up to get things for us. So any holiday, including Passover, would start off with our dining room table getting extended and the chairs being put around. So there would be some dining room chairs as well as some kitchen chairs. And my mom loved to set a beautiful table. And she was of the generation that when they got married, they got china and silver and crystal. And so she would start organizing the serving platters, usually a day or two ahead of time. She had a wide variety of beautiful bowls and plates for serving, as well as serving pieces. And so each empty dish would get a piece of paper, and whatever was going to go into that dish was written on the piece of paper. So this plate would be for the kugel, this would be for the brisket. Everything would have a place. And she would start cooking ahead of time. And I don't know how she did it. I am not a good entertainer. I may be very nurturing in my work, which I am. Not so nurturing when I am on Laurel time. And I find entertaining to be overwhelming. You know, timing everything in the oven so that things are ready at the same time. And somehow my mom did this. Especially Passover, there were a lot of moving pieces. So she would have prepared the main course. And in the day, my mom made gefilte fish. I say this with some wonder because it was no small undertaking. It was a lot of fish she would get from somewhere, I don't know. Some Jewish fish market, I think. And then all the fish would have to be ground and made into gefilte fish. And my mom's gefilte fish was really good. I recognize that you may not like fish, and that's okay, but it was one of those foods that we grew up with for Passover. And my mom would make a kugel and a meat dish of some kind, and she would make often these super yummy oven roasted potatoes that were fantastic. And I don't know if you did this in your family, but our family, we picked stuff, meaning something came out of the oven and you would look for a little end or a little bit that you could nibble on before the actual meal. So the oven roasted potatoes, you would walk into by the kitchen, you'd walk into the kitchen. You couldn't just walk by the kitchen, you'd walk into the kitchen and find a little awesome crispy bit and sneak it. Or the kugel, you'd find a little round bit on top that you'd break off and eat. So there was always some element of nibbling before the gathering. At almost every holiday, I remember that, whether we were doing Thanksgiving at my aunt's house and you'd go in for a little bit of stuffing. You always need that pre-meal nibble. And I love the memory of walking into a house and having all the smells. Yes, especially growing up in the Midwest, it would be cold. You'd walk into a warm house and it would smell so delicious. And I was thinking, you know what I left out of the last Passover episode is I didn't tell you about Elijah. Elijah's important. So for those of you who don't know, part of the Passover ceremony is you put out a cup of wine for the prophet Elijah. And at some point in the service, you open a door and you welcome in Elijah. So the mythology of it, the mystical part of it, or the legend, is that the prophet Elijah will come in and drink from this glass of wine. You know, in Judaism, we don't have things like the Easter Bunny, so Elijah was sort of as close as we were going to get. And as kids, everyone had a theory on Elijah. Did Elijah really come? And there would always be some kid who said, I don't know. At my friend's house, they put a mark on the glass and the wine was lower. Of course, you know, probably some cousin or aunt or somebody took a sip of wine when nobody was looking, but we would compare notes on if the glass of wine for Elijah actually went down. And how could Elijah go to everybody's house at the same time? So the Santa Claus dilemma would show up when we would talk about Elijah and Elijah's cup. So I couldn't leave Elijah out of the equation because that was part of the childhood magic. So for quite a while, it would have been about 13 of us around the dining room table at my mom's house. It's my mom and dad's house. My father passed away in 2003, so that's why I say my mom's house, because I associated it with her because she outlived him, but it was my parents' house. And as my cousins got married and had kids, we now added 4 more children to the equation. So now our 11 went to 15. Am I doing this right? And maybe one of us would invite a friend, because I often invited a friend. That would be 16. And somehow we fit around that table. I don't know how that is even possible. The kids would ultimately get up and run around. And then my brother and his wife and my sister and her husband started having kids. I don't know how he did it. But maybe you have a memory of your family squeezing into impossibly small spaces and it's somehow working. At some point, we had a children's table, I think, in the living room. And I don't know how my mom prepared food for that many people and then was nice. Sorry. I am such a crabby entertainer. I don't know how she did it. So, if there were 16 people, do you know how big a brisket you have to buy for 16 people? Or how many roasted potatoes that is? So the way our Seder would work, and probably most of yours if you were Jewish, is you have the first part of the Seder, which involves the Manishtana and Elijah's cup and the Herosis. And then it almost became like a speed round of food. We would then eat a hard-boiled egg with salt water, which was symbolic of spring. So the small dishes would go out, the bowl of eggs would circulate the table, and you'd put the egg and a little bit of salt water if you wanted in your bowl. It was always a paper bowl in our house, and eat the egg. And then it's almost as soon as the egg was done, the bowls are collected and a little plate comes out for the gefilte fish. In our house, most of us loved gefilte fish. We grew up with it. And one of the things that goes with gefilte fish is horseradish. Now, I need to tell you about my relationship with horseradish. It wasn't until I was an adult that I realized that horseradish was like a root vegetable that you could get in the produce department, because growing up, I only knew about horseradish in the little glass jars from Manischewitz. There was the white horseradish and the red horseradish. And the red horseradish was the same exact horseradish, but it was flavored and colored with beet juice. So part of Passover is there would be, I think we'd usually have both horseradishes, if I'm not mistaken. And there would be a little bit of, we would call it the bitter herbs, which was a shaved piece of horseradish, I think, at some point. But horseradish in my world came in glass jars. And I remember just a few years ago, as an adult, I was at a grocery store and someone looked at me. I must have had matzah in my cart or something. And they looked at me and they said, "Do you know where the horseradish is?" And I directed them towards where the glass jars could be found. And she's like, no, no, the fresh horseradish. And I laughed. I was like, this is how I know I'm a Jew. My first way of thinking about horseradish is the little Manischewitz jar. And I don't know, for those of you who grew up Jewish, I don't know how it was in your family, but in our family, and I seem to recall pretty much in the area that I grew up, we typically did not eat spicy food. So this jalapeno everything that exists now did not exist in my world as a kid. The place that our spice would come in was horseradish. That was as spicy and as adventurous as we would get. And I cannot tell you about Passover without the memory of my father and somebody else. You know, I'm sure it was other people at the table, but especially my dad. He would always put a big dollop of horseradish on his gefilte fish, and then he would always joke about how that totally clears out the sinuses, because it would. And everybody would sort of make that same gasping noise together as they ate the horseradish. I never got into horseradish, so I don't have any personal story to tell you, but just that was part of our Passover ritual, was how much horseradish one person could have on a piece of gefilte fish. So that was the speed round. We had the eggs, and then we had to clear that out really fast. And then came the gefilte fish, and that got cleared out quickly because the meal was getting ready. I mean, it must be like NASCAR pit crew, the way my mother had everything timed. I don't know how she did it, because then there were at least three or four dishes that had to get passed around for the meal. So we're all eating the meal then. At some point, my mother sits down. I don't know how she did this all. And also, just a reminder, part of Passover is drinking wine. There are a ritual 4 glasses of wine that are consumed. So you're kind of getting a little tired. There's a lot of food. There's some wine. You've been sitting for a long time during a service. And at some point, someone has to say, let's finish up, because there's a second part of the service that happens after the meal. So you've got the first part of the service, you've got the egg gefilte fish meal round, and then you have the later part of the service. So one of the first things that happens in the second part of the service is the searching for the Afek Homan, which I covered in depth in the last episode, so we will not return to that. And then there is a lot of singing, and that happened in our family a lot. There was always a big round of singing, and it would get harder and harder for the smaller kids to sit, but the adults always had a good time. You know, we would always get ready for the next song or the next prayer. And I have memories of my dad and my cousin singing Chag Gad Yah, which is one of the songs we sing at Passover, which I just read the English translation, and it is not a happy song. But we would always laugh as my cousin and my dad would go through Chag Gad Yah together. I don't know, just really a lot of memories. And I don't know how we all fit around that table in the little dining room, but we did. It somehow would expand to accommodate us. And then we would get together and do the next night at my aunt's house, or vice versa. And my aunt's Passover repertoire always included this yummy carrot pudding, which I talked about in another podcast episode, but oh, it was delicious. I know that the only thing in it was stuff that's really bad for you, because it was very sweet and rich and dense. So lots of wonderful memories. And I feel the love rippling into this moment. That's the cool thing about our hearts, is our hearts carry the warmth of the memories across our lifetime. And I can feel and sense and taste and experience the love of all of those Passovers across time and space. And you know, I have one other thing I want to share with you. So I've been having fun looking up Passover recipes. I just want to file a complaint with whoever would be in charge of this. There are really amazing, cool recipes now for Passover that did not exist when I was a child. Or maybe my mom and aunt did not know about them because they did not have access to something as mystical and wonderful as the internet back then. I was just on Instagram looking at people's Passover food, because why not, right? My version of Passover food is peanut butter and jelly on a matzah. And I also should say I don't keep Passover anymore, but I'm sort of in it for the spirit of it. Over the holidays, let's see, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that, not for Passover, but for a different holiday, I was first introduced to the sweet mashup that is the saltine crackers with the caramel on top with the chocolate and the nuts. My sister made it. And I guess apparently this is a thing because I see it all over now. Do you know people make that with matzah? Why did no one think of this in Skokie, where I would have found out about it when I was a child? It's the matzah, and you put it on a baking sheet and you make up the caramel sauce with melted chocolate and some nuts. And then you break it up and it's like matzah caramel bark. You know, my whole Passover experience would have been different if that had been an option. Instead, we had the cans of macaroons, not macarons, macaroons, and those gross fruit jelly things. I really would have been very different if I had had chocolate matzah bark. But that's okay. You know, having just the macaroons and those fruit jelly candies is my version of, oy, we walked in the snow for 10 miles to school. It's my version of, we just had these gross jelly candies and canned macaroons. The idea of chocolate flourless cake or anything like that did not happen until I was well into my late teens. So there was that element of denial that would come with Passover that cracks me up, because I don't know that it's that hard now. When I look around the store and I look at recipes and I look at Instagram, I think there are a lot of options. And you know, to be honest, we live in the day and age where we are so used to different dietary restrictions, right? Gluten-free, wheat-free, cauliflower everything. I think Passover has gotten a lot easier. 60s and the 70s, it was meager, the options. But it was a wonderful holiday, and I want to just send a ripple of love across the years. And I am so deeply grateful for having grown up with this being a holiday that brought so much love into my life and into my heart, and that we have so many shared memories. I am so deeply grateful because those memories carry me through to this time and space. And I have love for those who are no longer with us, but they are absolutely with us in heart and spirit. And for you too, my beautiful beloveds who are listening, I hope you can feel your own ripple of love. And if for some reason you did not grow up with this kind of love or ritual in your life, my hope is it finds you now. It's never too late to build ritual and love into our lives. So here we go. We can have a Seder on the astral realm. And I'll give you a prize if you find the Afikoman. And I'll make that really good matzah bark. I won't make you eat those fruit jellies. Because if we're going to get together on the astral realm, we can have it be whatever we want. And if you are one who celebrates Easter, happy Easter to you. I didn't grow up with any cool Easter memories, but perhaps you have a lot of them about the Easter bunny and the egg hunt, which would have been really cool to do. I never did get to go on an egg hunt. But I do love jelly beans, and the concept of the Easter bunny is cool. So, however this finds you, I love you, and I am deeply grateful for you, and thank you for indulging me and letting me share this expression of love with you. This is part of the matrix that helped me to become who I am. I grew up with a lot of love, and I'm lucky. And so now I get to share this love with you. And I pay tribute to my mom and my dad who made it all work somehow, and my aunt and my uncle who did the same. I am so grateful for all of it. And I share this gratitude and this love with you. So you rest well. And if you want, while you're sleeping, maybe we can meet up in the astral realm and have a meal together and share more memories. So I love you. You have a wonderful rest. And we'll talk again soon. Thank you.